You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
What if we are here for a reason? What if we are a part of something truly divine? Imagine 91 billion light years traveled like that.
Sweet dreams are made of this.
Your father has accomplished something extraordinary. Also dangerous. He's trapped by a darkness that's actively spreading throughout the universe. And the only one who can stop it is you. Be a
warrior. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me this week on the show is Caitlin Battle.
Hiya.
And this week we are going to be talking about A Wrinkle in Time. And we were supposed to do this a couple weeks ago, or we were going to do it when the movie came out, but we just have not had the time to talk about it. And we needed to get Love, Simon and Thoroughbreds out of the way before they ran out of theaters. So before we get started, Caitlin, what did you think of A Wrinkle in Time?
Oh my God. Okay. So I actually tried to read the book before I went to go see the movie and film in the theater. Uh-huh. I made it about 20 pages in before I had to go see it. So I have exactly 20 pages worth of book knowledge going into this. And let me just say, it's not good. I mean,
the movie or the book?
No, the book's fine, but the movie, I have feelings. It's kind of dumb, not gonna lie. It's pretty dumb.
Yeah. This is gonna hurt because I like what the movie's trying to do, but It still doesn't work.
It's not a good movie, which is very surprising because there was a lot of hype for this movie before it even came out. And I was like, oh man, I better keep this movie on my radar. It's going to be amazing. And then I watched it and I'm just like, where's the movie everyone was so excited about? Like, what was that?
Yeah, this was kind of an anticipated movie because it's Ava DuVernay who had directed Selma and 13 for Netflix. She's now, you know, the first like African-American or black filmmaker to make $100 million movie, a black female filmmaker making $100 million movie. And she has Oprah in it. She has Reese Witherspoon. She has Chris Pine. And it's, you know, the lead is an interracial child. There was just so much, you know, hype and, you know, love going into it that I wish the movie would have done better. And I think the problem, not to get into the problems right away, but I think the problem with the movie is it works so well as a kid's movie that they forgot to make a movie also for the parents watching it.
Oh, absolutely.
Or the adults watching it. Go ahead.
It's very clear to me that the kind of story that they're trying to tell is not one that lends itself very easily to a film adaptation. And it's not for lack of trying. I don't know if this kind of story works in a visual medium.
Well, for me, it's not that the story doesn't work in a visual medium per se. Like how this movie could work. Especially since I am trying to be a screenwriter, and I can see where in certain plot beats, this movie could work and could be elevated better. And from, like, for me, I feel like they have the characters in place. They have the setup in place, but they do nothing with it. They absolutely do nothing. Yeah. They do nothing with these characters. And it's kind of frustrating because, like, on the surface, I forgot the character. Meg would be on it, an interesting character. She's a flawed person who worries about, who has anxiety over her hair. She's still, you know, dealing in her own way, you know, with the loss of her father. She's still, you know, she's got a lot going on and she's flawed. But the thing is, the movie doesn't build on that or do anything with it until the end, when she basically proclaims that she has learned to love herself, but we've never seen her, you know, but we've never seen her journey towards that. And for me, that's kind of this is the best way I can describe the problem of A Wrinkle in Time, is that the film doesn't take the time to show us these characters develop in this world and how they change over time. We're told and then eventually seen the end result of it, rather than seeing, you know, the kind of hard work of building to that machination, building to that, you know, payoff.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. Honestly, I don't think there are a couple of really interesting visuals that I really do like. Like, just to kind of go back on what I was saying before, when I was saying that it can't really be adapted in film, there are a couple of things they did really, really well. And I really liked how, like, even just as a little thing, I liked how they did the Disney logo. There's a couple of little editing tricks that I thought looked really cool. But I think there's so many things about this movie that fail that it's really hard to get invested on what's even happening. Like, Meg is a character, even though she has a lot of things that you, on paper, would make her an interesting character, they never really fully explore. The actress, I don't know what the actress's name is, but she doesn't do that good of a job emoting.
Storm Reid, the girl who plays Meg?
Yes.
Okay.
None of the adults feel like real people. I remember watching this movie in the theater. And I remember my first my first reaction to some of the adults, like this is a child who just lost her father, and she lost him a while ago, and she's obviously acting out in spite of that. And every single adult around her is just a complete, for lack of a better word, they're just dicks. Like, yeah. That whole scene with the principal, like, no principal should talk like that to a child. That is not what you do.
And he's in and out. You don't ever see him again.
Yeah, he's just there to be a jerk and then leave. Her mom is barely in the movie, but when we first get introduced to her, she's also just kind of being a jerk. There's the bullies that are jerks to her. Like, pretty much every adult character before they go into that other dimension is a huge jerk. Her dad is probably one of the few exceptions, but every other adult in this movie is terrible.
I mean, her brother and the other person that accompanies her, Calvin, doesn't, they're not terrible people,
but yeah, even but kids.
Yeah. So yeah, they are. And even, you know, even the three characters that kind of show up, I'm trying to look up their names, Mrs. Who, Mrs. Witch, and Mrs. What's It, they're kind of just loose on, you know, terms and describing things in this world, even though they're trying to tell us everything about this world. Everyone acts like they all just read the script and just memorized it. It's not really a performance.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Nothing feels natural or organic. And that's to say nothing of the fact that I barely understood what was happening half of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the plot was all over the place. We get into the movie, like, right off the back, I'm having a hard time relating to most of the characters. I don't understand what's going on. And when the plot hits, it quite literally hits out of nowhere and no one's asking the right questions. Like there's a lady who just pops up in their house and nobody's asking any real questions. Like they're like, oh, who are you? What's going on? And then she just starts speaking in riddles and everyone's like, this is fine. This is fine.
This is normal Thursday night.
it's very odd, and it makes me question how seriously I'm meant to take the story, because this is very clearly something that most people would not have that mellow of a reaction to, and yet the characters themselves are not really responding that much to it. So I'm just like, okay, clearly this is something I'm not supposed to take that seriously. But then the third act of the movie happens, and then suddenly everything's really intense and there's so much at stake, and I'm just like, I don't know where my priorities are supposed to be.
Yeah, because when we get to, I think it's The Darkness itself. I don't remember what it's called, but
I think it's called The It. Is it The It?
Yeah, that's one of the ways they refer to it. When we get to The It, it basically everything just goes super quick, super fast, and you know things happen. There's a like sucking of the ground thing happening. And they get propelled over it to or something, and then they find Charles Wallace. He's hypnotized. Oh, by the way, we're in the spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
And the movie's been out for like 2-3 weeks now, so yeah,
so it's probably fine.
Yeah. So Charles Wallace gets possessed by Michael Pena, and then they're in the Matrix, the architect room from the Matrix. And then they find it's just a lot of things are just happening in this third act to kind of just wrap it up. It almost seems like in this movie that they're just in a race to get it over with. That's how the movie kind of feels to me, is it's such in a race that it wants to just get over. And it's so unfortunate because I'm watching it and there's still so much potential. There's still so much to be mined. But it feels so much like we're in a race to get out of here.
Definitely. It's been about a week since I've seen the movie, and I'm struggling to remember specific moments and scenes because just so much of it is just we're in, we're out. Like nothing. I feel like despite how long the movie is and despite everything that supposedly happens, nothing really happens. Like they go to this other dimension, they mess around for a bit until they find that guy, until the plot kicks into the third half of the movie, and then everything kind of happens in hyperdrive. Like the entire second half of this movie is just them wandering from location to location, not really accomplishing anything
or learning that much. Like I mean, there's an argument to be made that Meg has to learn how to trust like the outer reality of the situation in order to, you know, find her father or find out where he is.
Is that what I was supposed to get out of that?
Yeah.
I must have missed that hardcore.
Yeah, that's what she's supposed to get out of it. And it doesn't really, it does. And you're just like, but why do I care? I mean, why do I care? And, you know, and yeah, I mean, by the time we get to the It, we're like, oh, we only got 20 minutes left of the movie. So everything just goes
for a nap.
Yeah. So it's like a film student racing to finish their project.
That's a very apt comparison. Since we're on characters right now, do you want to talk about Charles Wallace or should I start with that?
Go ahead.
I feel bad because I know how hard it is for child actors to do acting. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if it's necessarily the actor's fault. He might have just been given poor direction, but he was not very good. Like he definitely, like the guy who played Charles Wallace, which by the way, I know it's in the book, but every single time they say just Charles Wallace, that's just odd. Like no one does that. No one calls someone by their first and last name every time they're a drip. Like you could just use a pronoun. That's anyway.
That's not even his last name. It's just Charles Wallace.
He was not for a character that, for an actor that he clearly doesn't have maybe he just didn't have the direction, but he doesn't have the ability to carry as much of the screen time as he was given in the movie. It's very awkward. It's very uncomfortable. Like every moment he's on screen, I see the child behind the actor. I don't see the character.
For me, it wasn't that big of a problem. Primarily because he is acting like a kid who has potential, or he's playing the part of Charles Wallace the best. Like I can't imagine any other child actor doing it any better. Like it really was the best performance we could possibly get, because there's a lot to be asked out of Charles Wallace. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, and some of it is the direction, like in the final scene where the It is attacking Meg and it has possession of Charles Wallace, the actor is just standing there, not doing much. And it's just obvious he's just standing in a green screen room, not looking exactly like. So I think part of it is the direction. And part of it is, this is the best we could get out of it, because the character of Charles Wallace himself, it's a little complicated to tackle.
Yeah. And that's what that's the part that makes me confused, because I mean, it is an adaptation and there are some liberties that you're going to have to take with some of the characters. So if you found out that maybe the child actor that you have that plays such an integral role to the story isn't really working out as well as you think, or you can't really get the performance that you want, why not change that aspect? It is an adaptation after all. Why not adapt and make it something different, make it something new?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why after seeing the performance he gave, they thought, well, maybe we'll just leave that in instead of trying to find a way to work it to make it a little bit better. Because as it was not fun. It was like watching a third grade play some of the time.
It is. Especially when he's screaming, "Shut up, Meg."
Yeah, that was just, I was just like, "Aw, he's cute. He's a cute baby."
Somebody's been watching Family Guy.
Charles was not my favorite character. I often, while watching the movie, I was so taken out of it, which is really weird for me, because whenever I watch a film, I always do my best to get as enveloped in the world as I possibly can. And I found it so hard because I never found quite the entry point into this world. Like there was never like anything that I could quite grasp onto. Nothing felt real about it. And that's to say nothing about the actual unreal looking CGI, which, dear God, like they looked like they were standing on a CGI set. I could not even remotely get invested in anything that was happening. Nobody acted like a real person. Nobody acted, period. There was just nothing real or interesting, not even the ideas. Like I know the book is a bit older. Like it came out in like the 60s, I think, 1963.
Yeah, somewhere around that.
A lot of the ideas the book presents, even though a lot of people grew up with them and used the ideas, in future stories, a lot of them have already been played out. So there isn't really, it's not that interesting to me. And I know it technically wasn't made for me. It is a kid's film and it's made for kids. I just feel like maybe this movie was built more on emotion rather than logic.
I wouldn't even say emotion, because I was watching the movie and it was hard to get emotionally invested in anything, because nothing was paid. The connecting tissue between the setup and payoff was quite poor. So for me, it is emotional to see. So I mean, for a kid, it's emotional to see, someone your age up there and battling, giant CG monsters. Like that's important. But the thing about this movie is that, you know, especially when you get older and you, you know, come back to it, it doesn't, it's not going to hold up. It's not going to hold up for, you know, that kid or this generation of kids that are going to watch it. And then they're going to look at it 10 to 15 years from now. So while trying to be a kid's movie, it fails in, it'll ultimately have this problem of rewatchability. And I think that's kind of that's the misstep of A Wrinkle in Time, is relying so much on, you know, putting so much of faith on, you know, just kids enjoying it.
That being said, as sort of a little addendum to this, to my criticism of the movie, I do really think kids would enjoy it. It really is unfortunate that it couldn't reach a broader audience, because I feel like it very easily could, but for the demographic that it was going for, I do think kids will really like it. It's a very silly story that's very difficult to take seriously, but it also has an interesting core to it. Like, it feels a lot like those old school kids movies that also didn't make a whole lot of sense, like The Goonies, for example, or like The Neverending Story. It's got the same feeling as that, where it's driven more on feeling than it is on logic. It's very unfortunate that it couldn't tell a more cohesive story despite that. Like, stories can be surreal and still follow like a kind of logic, and I feel like A Wrinkle in Time was all over the place, but I think maybe that's what it was trying to go for, and it didn't quite hit the mark. But I feel like for a lot of kids who maybe are a little bit younger, it might be enough to get them thinking in a way that they might normally not have.
Right. So with that said, is there anything we like about this movie?
hang on. Let me think. I like the third act. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was interested in the first act, but not really sure where anything was going. I was bored to tears during the second act, but the third act, when everything actually starts happening, I was pretty on board with that. I mean, it was stupid, but at least something was happening. So that was really cool. I liked when they went to that, that cul-de-sac? That was really cool. Like, that was unique. It was interesting. I still can't tell you what was going on, but it was visually interesting, and it was cool to watch. And the reunion between Meg and her father was actually pretty heartwarming, despite everything. Like, I don't know if it necessarily earned that moment, but in that moment, I believed it.
Yeah, I was talking about how the payoff, how in the film, the setup and payoff don't quite work as well, because the connecting tissue just is either not there all the way or it's non-existent. For me, watching that scene of Meg reuniting with her father, it is an emotional scene. It's an emotional, you know, moment, and it's an emotional father-daughter moment. I wish I knew more about their relationship before that moment, but we're working with what we got here. So, and in terms of other things I just liked, I like the package that I was presented more than the actual thing itself. I like the box. Box of it, where
I like the glitter. That was nice. I like the glitter.
Yeah, that was really nice. Because what I mean by the box is, you know, is that you have a young interracial lead who's leading the charge, is telling this, I guess, not really her boyfriend, but just male companion,
Calvin.
Yeah.
If I may make like a mild tangent, what did he even do in this movie?
Nothing.
He was just there. He didn't do anything.
He was just arm candy.
He fell. He almost died that one time.
He fell off the lettuce leaf.
Oh, he ate a sandwich. That was made of sand. That's it. Thank you, Calvin. Your contribution to this film. Thank you.
It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's going to win Oscars. It's incredible.
Best sandwich eating scene.
Yep. He convinced me he was really eating a sandwich.
That was one realistic looking sandwich. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
Oh, it's all right. I like the package, and I like that. I like the little touches that DuVernay made for the child of Meg. I liked its potential and its optimism. It's hard to really bash on the movie, even though that's what we've been doing the last 10, 15 minutes. But it's kind of hard to, because you see the potential, and you see that, you know, there's so that this could have been a really well-made movie. And I think that's what hurts the most, is that there could have been more done. There could have been just a little bit more development, just, you know, more development between each of the characters' relationships that just makes the ending that much more impactful. Because I can see, like, you know, on a wall of, like, note cards where they're structuring the movie and they're, like, and explaining it to, like, studio executives, like, how this is all going to go. And it would sound compelling. I can see how they can make this that compelling. But in the motion and in the way it's presented, it still has this issue of it just, you just don't buy into it, or you don't get into it the way you should have. So I guess now that I've had like a week or two away from really 2 weeks away from the movie, mm-hmm. I guess really the thing I dislike about the movie is the box, rather than the toy.
That's very, very accurate to say. Mm-hmm. It's a very pretty package, mm-hmm. but the actual toy inside is just not that much fun. And that's honestly the sad part about it. I liked some of the visual effects. I actually really liked the makeup. The makeup is actually pretty nice. I liked some of the ideas, but I feel like that comes more from the book rather than like the actual movie itself.
Yeah. So, would we recommend A Wrinkle in Time at all in any capacity?
Wait, hold on. We can't end this podcast without talking about the elephant in the room here. Or should I say the 50-foot tall elephant in the room here?
Oprah.
Oh my God. When I saw that in the theater, I cried. I had legitimate tears running down my face laughing at that.
She can now hand people cars.
Oh my God. And they're just flying by her.
You get a car.
And they're flying by her giant face. And Charles Wallace reaches his outstretched hand to grace her cheek. And he's just like, "Yes, child, you may touch my face. I am Oprah. I died. I legit died."
She.
Oh God, this movie was dumb. I mean, and honestly, for me, I actually liked it, despite all of my criticisms, despite how stupid this movie actually is. For me, it actually kind of rounds back to being so bad that it's good. Like, it's very hokey, it's very dumb, it's kind of cheesy and a little bit corny, but for me, it's fun. Like, you grab a couple beers with your friends and you watch this movie, you'll have a good time.
Yeah. If you have a bunch of kids, they'll enjoy it.
Oh yeah, kids can watch the movie too.
Yeah.
Give them a beer, they'll love it even more.
Yep. The youth group promotes drinking. not really.
Please don't do this.
No.
Don't sue me.
Drink responsibly and age appropriate. but yeah, it's okay. I mean, 2018's kind of been the year of okay, for the exception of like two or three movies.
It could be worse. It could
be worse. Yeah. It could be
a lot better.
We're just kind of in the middle because we're still in awe of Black Panther, and Love, Simon's actually really good.
I love that movie.
I know on my Twitter I keep like promoting it and, you know, singing the praise, but yeah. But that's, you know, that's one of like two or three movies that I like legit love this year. So, you know, what I'll promote the things I love, and then I'll tell everyone to not see the things that I didn't like. But yeah, it's just been a whatever year, and this movie's kind of representative of it. So, with that said, do you have any more final thoughts on A Wrinkle in Time?
Final thoughts. Let's see. This movie was dumb, but I kind of liked it anyway. Oprah is really big. I want to buy glitter. That's it. That's all I got. Go see it, I guess. But also, maybe don't see it in a movie theater.
Definitely, like, see it in your nice, in the comfort of your home. Maybe, like, have it on when you're, like, cooking, because it's kind of beautiful. It's still beautiful to look at. Like, it's still, like, it's still very pretty. Like, the color correction on this movie is very well done.
And there are a couple of scenes that are actually pretty well shot. Mm-hmm. Like, in the first act, when she's just standing on the basketball field, and she's just bouncing the ball. Well, and she's just standing there, and all the kids are moving in fast motion around her. That was actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as recommendations go, just read the book. I think you'll get more out of the book than you will out of this adaptation. But if maybe you're pressed for time and you want to see what the fuss is about, maybe check it out. Just don't pay for it. Go rent it or something.
Yeah, that's what I will say too. Go rent it. It's still good. It'll keep the kids entertained. Keep the kids entertained. That's all I can say. So, with that said, where can the good people find you, Caitlin?
You can find me on YouTube at Magic Mermaid Girl, or you can also find me on Twitter with the same thing, Magic Mermaid Girl YT.
All right, cool. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHG Network. Thank you all for tuning in. We will be back very, very soon to talk about Pacific Rim 2 and Ready Player One.
Yay!
Yay.
I'll try.
Going to be tested every step of the way. Trust nothing.
Darling, time for dinner. Are you lost?
The only thing faster than light. Darkness.